Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 9 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, June the 22nd, and it's time for our Friday Week in Review. Each week at this time, we talk about the latest state, national, and international news making headlines in the past week. We are joined by two guests from different perspectives, one on the left and one on the right, typically, and with you. And here's a question I have for you. Why am I playing this song? Well, Celine Dion's You and I made the news this week. We'll talk about why, and we'll also talk about why New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg withdrew officially from the Republican Party this week and whether or not he's poised to launch an independent bid for the presidency. We'll talk about lots of other issues, including the latest on the Frankenstein veto, and whatever issue you want to bring up at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are joined by two guests in the studio. We are happy to have with us Dave Blaska, former Dane County supervisor. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And Ben Mansky, former co-chair of the U.S. Green Party, currently a fellow for the Liberty Tree Foundation for the Democratic Revolution. Good morning.
Morning, Joy, and morning, Dave.
Well, let's talk about the news that we're hearing about in NPR News all morning long, one of the lead stories, that the Senate did pass an energy bill. It will increase fuel economy standards, new laws against energy price gouging, huge increases in the production of ethanol. What do you think of this, Ben Mansky?
Well, this being 1976, I think it's about time that they took this step. Now, seriously, I mean, it's a little late and it's a little limited. I know that there were a number of steps that were proposed by various members of Congress that would have allocated more funding for renewables, and that certainly would have been a more far-sighted step for Congress to take, for the Senate to take. But that didn't go through, and you know, essentially what we've had is a little bit of a holding action, and now you know, maybe a step back for the automobile industry there. You know, and I really think what this points to is the real cost for Americans with having corporations running our government, frankly, funding the candidates, you know, funding an army of lobbyists in Washington, D.C., and really controlling the agenda and controlling the debate. They made a decision that, yes, there is widespread public anger over the lack of movement on energy policy in this country, and that they needed to take a step back in order to prevent the thoroughgoing reforms to energy policy in the United States that are so desperately needed. We really do need a massive shift to dependence on renewables, to energy conservation. It's in our interest, and I think that we should continue to push and demand more substantive changes.
It says, if this becomes law, the auto industry will have to boost average fuel economy by 40% to 35 miles per gallon for cars, SUVs, and pickup trucks by the year 2020. This measure now goes to the House. Dave Blaska, you like this or not?
Well, I've been across from some liberals in this program before, and I'm going to have to print up some bumper stickers that said, you know, just adopt a corporation, because they get blamed for everything here. It's sort of the all-purpose bogeyman.
Is there a liberal in the room here?
You know, there's a progressive, isn't there?
Yeah. I don't know that this law is going to drill one oil well. You know, the cafe, corporate average fuel economy is fine, I suppose, if you believe that government can mandate fuel economy. The fact of the matter is the rush to buy a Toyota Prius occurred when gasoline hit $3 a gallon. That is a motivator. People make intelligent decisions in our free market economy. They purchase vehicles. They make travel plans. You know, unless this, and I don't have the entire details of this bill, but unless this country gets some nuclear energy going, which is one of the cleanest, France, I think, has something like 80% of its energy needs supplied by nuclear. France is a pretty nice country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, President Bush was pushing nuclear energy yesterday too, Ben Mansky. You don't like that idea.
Well, yeah, I think that's a safe assumption as long as we don't have anywhere to put the waste. And, you know, maybe there's some folks, oh, Minnesota, right?
Well, I just think we shoot it in space, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you can work that out
and
show
me plans. They have a mountain in Nevada.
Right, and, on a fault line. Yeah, it's a big issue. Nobody wants it in their backyard, and for good reason. And you know, there's a fundamental problem with nuclear power, which is that you're dealing with a technology that creates waste problems that will survive any civilization that you look at in history. Right? I mean, is the United States government going to be here 500 years from now?
It won't be unless we go with nuclear. I mean, we'll be pushing little push carts around. We don't have the United States as we know it.
Sure.
You know, the interesting thing with people say we have to have alternate fuels and whatnot. I think there's a town board somewhere in central Wisconsin that just turned down a wind farm. Ed Garvey, my adversary in many of these programs, Joy, has brought lawsuits against wind farms. He has a lawsuit against an ethanol farm or ethanol plant in Arena in Iowa County. People talk about these alternative forms of fuel, but nobody wants them in their backyards either, Ben.
Well, I would certainly welcome a windmill in my backyard. It could help me to pay the mortgage on my place with
not
the way
like
the
an
costs
oil
are going.
Well,
yeah, there you go.
Not like an oil
but,
well.
But let's talk about oil just briefly. You know, if you want to advocate for a free market approach, I'd certainly embrace that in this case because when you look at the oil industry, we're looking at an industry that is probably subsidized like no other, except for maybe nuclear power in the United States. And so, yeah, let's take the oil companies off the public trough. Stop subsidizing them through the massive investment we put into road construction, that we put into occupying foreign countries, and let's have some true cost basis for people making decisions about transportation.
Let's move on to another issue. Let's hear from New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg the day after he withdrew his affiliation with the Republican Party.
My intention is to be mayor for the next 925 days.
Downplaying the speculation that he is poising himself for an independent bid to run for president, but he certainly didn't rule out that possibility, saying things like, the more people that run, the better. Is Michael Bloomberg going to run as independent or a third party, Ben Mansky?
Well, he's certainly spending a lot of time denying that he's going to be running, and I haven't talked to him recently, but certainly all the signs seem to be pointing to an 08 run, which I think could be very, very interesting. You know, I would hesitate to make any firm predictions about where that would turn out. Certainly, Ross Perot originally was expected to have a negative impact on the Democrats when he first came in 92, and the reverse happened. I think that from the standpoint of independent politics and a lot of the issues we're talking about today, I think highlight the need for independent politics with the two parties that are in power essentially spending a lot of time just in one-upmanship, trying to frame the debate rather than push through reforms, that his entry into the race could open the door for other candidates of other parties. And that certainly was the case with Ross Perot, to be frank. As much as I might agree with him on some issues and disagree with him perhaps on immigration, I'm looking forward to a Bloomberg candidacy, to be frank.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Dave?
Well, I guess, you know, Ben, I'm all ears here, as Ross Perot once said, as to what Bloomberg brings to the party. I don't know that he's a reformer.
Certainly not.
Giuliani was a reformer in New York. He banned the squeegee guys and whatnot, and the civil libertarians went crazy. He said, look, we've got to have a good place to live. You've got to be able to walk your dog in peace here and not get hassled. And the liberals went crazy with that. I don't know what he brings to the party except a satchel full of cash. I mean, he could buy his own political party. It's an interesting thing. We disparage the political parties, the two-party system. The two-party system is broken. We've had so-called campaign finance laws that supposedly are going to help things and only makes things worse. They've taken the political parties really out of the game. It was a backroom, smoke-filled room that gave us Harry Truman, for instance. I mean, some of our greatest presidents have come from that process.
Let's take a short pause, remind listeners that this is the Friday Week in Review, talking today with Dave Blaska, former Dane County Supervisor, Ben Mansky, former co-chair of the U.S. Green Party, and with you, too, if you want to talk about the news of the week, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email with your question or comment or issue to talk@WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. After 4 this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. And as he does every Friday in the 4 o'clock hour, it's your views on the news. You're invited to call in with your thoughts on the week's most significant news story. And Ben will have a guest analyst along to talk with you about the news of the week. We have two guest analysts during our Friday Week in Review. Today, Dave Blaska and Ben Mansky, and we welcome your thoughts about the news of the week at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Well, I already played Celine's song, You and I, a little earlier in the program, and I won't play it again. That was the winning pick. Hillary Clinton's campaign had a vote going on, a gimmick going on, where people could help her choose her campaign song, and people have been voting on this over the past several weeks. And she unveiled the winner in a kind of a spoof of the Sopranos finale that got quite a bit of attention. A lot of people say that she did this to, you know, warm up her image, to make her more accessible to the voters. Do you think it worked, Ben Mansky?
Well, this is clearly the pressing issue of the 2008 elections, and unfortunately, I think this is what the Democratic Party, in particular, is going to try to make the elections about. You know, Bill got elected on a saxophone playing in his shades, and you know, I think the real question.
Lots of shorts too.
That's true. That's true. You know, I think the question that it comes down to is, as they pose it, is do you want to spend the next year and a half listening to Celine Dion or not? And speaking for myself, I want another choice. And so, you know, I guess that brings it back to the Bloomberg sort of discussion we were just having earlier. I just want to correct. I don't see him as any kind of reformer. I don't have a Bloomberg bumper sticker to take off the back of my 92 car. But I do think that it could open up the process and maybe not only allow some more music into the elections, but some different perspectives that are not represented in the current debate, and in some cases which represent the majority opinion in this country, as, for example, is the case with the war.
Yeah. You got a 92 car? What kind of gas mileage you get on that?
It's not doing so hot anymore.
All right, well, I'm just, you know,
32 on the highway.
Go nuclear.
We'll talk more about the energy bill since we have some callers who want to talk about that. But first, Hillary Clinton also got booed at a conference this week for saying that it was the Iraqi government's fault, in essence, for not stepping up to the plate for some of the problems that we are in Iraq, and she got booed. Would you have booed her, Ben Mansky?
I don't know if I would have been at that conference, but I'm certainly glad that she's catching some from people at the base of the progressive movement in this country. And I think that one of the problems that she's going to be facing throughout 2008, she's already facing it now, is that there's a massive disconnect not only between the folks who normally vote Democrat in elections, but the broader American people on the question of the war in particular, and the front-running candidates. And I think one thing we are going to see in 2008 as opposed to 2004 is a lot more independence on the part of peace activists, on the part of veterans who are speaking out against the war, willing to say, no, we're not going to go for anybody but Giuliani or anybody but McCain. We are going to speak in our own voice and speak truth to power. And I think power in the case of Hillary Clinton heard some of that.
Yeah, that was the Take America Back conference, and mainly progressives.
Mainly Democrats.
Democrats. Okay. Yep. Well, would you have booed her, Dave Blaska?
No, I'm much too polite for that. you know, that's not a conservative value. I don't think we don't boo. We don't hiss. We just disagree. Actually, I was hoping that she would have chosen. I like Celine Dion, but I was hoping that Hillary would have chosen the song from the Titanic that would describe her campaign.
Well, I'm trying to remember what that one was.
Well, yeah. They all sound alike with Celine. It goes into Celine and it comes out, you know, Celine, I guess. I'm not a big fan. But, you know, Ben, I think you're still hoping for the next, you know, Ned Lamont, and they haven't shown up yet. They fire up the base, but they don't. I would have to ask you, who do you want to win in Iraq? Can I ask you a question?
I want the secular minority to win.
You want al-Maliki's constitutionally elected,
government? I support the trade union movement in Iraq, which wants the United States out. That's the independent trade union movement that is not part of the debates in Congress. You know, there are independent forces in Iraq that are neither right-wing fundamentalist nor corporate hacks.
Is that okay with al-Qaeda Iraq? Are they buying into that or not?
Let me ask you, at what point does the United States withdraw from Iraq?
You know,
at what point? Are we going to be there for 10 years, 20 years?
Tactically, we may have made a million mistakes. But I could go back to the purpose and the intention there. Is we've got Muslims killing Muslims. The greatest enemy of the Arab is the Arab in that part of the world. We've seen that in Gaza, where you want to go and get, if you're suffering and you need hospitalization, we'll get you out. We'll get you to Israel, where you can get some help. That's what Hamas and that's what some of these and all of these extremists are bringing to their people. They're promising them heaven, as someone once said, and they're giving them dust. And so there's a real, real problem in that part of the world.
So whether it's the world's policemen or it's the United States becoming an empire, you advocate the United States staying indefinitely in the Middle East.
I never said that. We may come to the point where we will have to say tactically we're not doing any good. I'm willing to accept that. But let's understand that I'm going to ask you if you want to go into Darfur.
What about Darfur?
Do you want to go in there?
I fully accept the consequences, and I'll point out that I opposed this war, as did millions of other Americans from the get-go. So, you know, if you're basically telling me that you don't know when we leave, the political party that you're affiliated with, along with the Democrats, got us in there in the first place.
I'm not going to pick a date on the calendar. Right.
Sure. I'm going to switch gears bit here. The White House, I like this program.
Sorry,
I can just listen to you guys. The White House insists a decision on closing the detainee center at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, is not imminent, and key legal decisions need to be made first. But senior officials tell the Associated Press that consensus is building for a plan to shut Guantanamo and send its inmates to one or more military prisons in America, including the top security prison at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. A meeting of top officials on Guantanamo was planned for today, but it was called off when word of this leaked out. So, what do we think of this, Dave Blaska, shutting down Guantanamo, maybe?
I'd rather be in Cuba than in Kansas, if I was a prisoner.
Why? Seriously?
The weather's better. Well, it's Cuba.
It's pretty hot.
Palm trees. Well, it's pretty cold in Leavenworth.
No?
Well, to me, mixed knocks. I mean, what's the difference? As long as these people are held, I'm fine.
Ben?
Well, I think it will certainly be an improvement when it happens. And this is the denial, like Bloomberg's denial. I think we know it's coming. I think, I can agree with the decision without sort of respecting the intentions behind it. I think this is certainly about 2008 and wanting to take Guantanamo out of the news. If that's what it takes, then maybe we should have presidential elections every year. I can't believe I just said that.
Well, here's President Bush the other day. Let's listen to him vetoing the stem cell bill.
If this legislation became law, it would compel American taxpayers for the first time in our history to support the deliberate destruction of human embryos. I made it clear to Congress and to the American people that I will not allow our nation to cross this moral line. Last year, Congress passed a similar bill. I kept my promise by vetoing it. And today, I'm keeping my word again. I'm vetoing the bill that Congress has sent.
So, do you agree with that, Dave Blaska?
Well, let's understand that this issue cuts very deeply with a lot of people. I don't know if it's a majority enough to reelect a president. I'll tell you what I do like about George Bush, and I've always liked, is that he's true to his principles. He doesn't put that moistened finger up into the jet stream and see which way it's blowing. The bill, I mean, it's a matter of 6 years, I think, Senator Harkin's bill would have used taxpayer money to support stem cell lines derived before June of really this month of 07. The current law is, I think, 2001. And given that, too, I mean, recently, just in the news, they were talking about some scientific breakthroughs that they're using mouse cells to do this. They're teasing out what they need. So I say, you go, President Bush.
Ben Mansky?
I think one of the problems with this issue from my perspective is that you have two, maybe three very powerful lobbies that are involved. You have the bedroom police, you have the corporations and the pharmaceutical industry, and you have the folks who are advocates for those who are suffering from terrible diseases, who I think are probably the most sympathetic of those sort of interests. But what we don't have in this debate is a effective lobby for the long-term consequences, for looking down the road to the seventh generation and saying, where are we going in terms of research on human beings, in terms of research on the genetic code, in terms of ownership, who owns the genome?
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
I really, really totally agree with that.
We don't want corporations or the government to be in a position where human beings are essentially just so much capital in the moral worth of humans and also of other living species gets broken down to the almighty dollar.
I agree with that. It's the boys from Brazil syndrome, I think. And that's the slippery slope that I've talked about before in this program.
We're going to take some calls. Marilyn in Elkhorn joins us. Hi, Marilyn.
Good morning. I was calling regarding the energy bill.
Mm-hmm.
And within the past week or so, there was another caller that said he had lived in England for a while, and American cars in England and Europe were getting 40 miles per gallon. So why can't they do that now here instead of waiting till 2020?
I think that's the imperial gallon. I think it's larger. Seriously, I think it is. It is. It's not the same measure.
I don't know. I've had the luxury of renting cars in Europe recently, and what she says is certainly true, that they're much more fuel efficient. On average, American cars are much smaller. In Europe, they're better built. They're built by union labor. And I think that it certainly can be done. It's been possible to do it for decades. We used to do it in some cases. Really what it comes down to, again, is the profit motive triumphing over a good public policy. The technology is there at this point in time to mass produce automobiles that get 75 miles per gallon on the road.
Gasoline has always been more expensive in Europe, always has been. I don't know if they've got the CAFE standards, if they've got legislation, but I tell you what, they've always had high fuel prices, and they have, and they've always had a wonderful built-up city center, which I like. I just recently visited Prague. They have a wonderful tram system. The sidewalks are about as wide as one person can walk, and if you're on the street, you're going to get hit by the tram, but I wasn't. I'm here to talk today, but it's a wonderful city.
So you support trolleys in Madison?
You know, I'm not reflexively opposed to that.
All right, right. I don't mean to take you off track. Yeah. No pun intended.
Yeah,
there.
Right.
Yeah. Does anyone know if Senators Feingold or Kohl voted for this energy bill? I'm going to have Leo look that up for us, because they were opposed to it when I was talking to a guest earlier this week. A guest was encouraging listeners to call Senators Feingold and Kohl. Mm. Maybe because of Janesville and the GM plant that they may not have.
May very well be, and they build the big vehicles there too, the SUVs.
Yeah, well, we'll check into that and see what happens. Let's take Mike in Appleton next. Hi, Mike, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. An immigration question. I'd like to pose the following question to the guest. Let us suppose that current laws were enforced and illegals were unable to obtain legal employment, and so they auto-deported themselves. Then the argument is, well, you know, what's going to happen to agriculture, industry, et cetera, because they're no longer available at $6.50 an hour. Let's take the case, let's say, of McDonald's. There's a person at $6.50 an hour. He's no longer available. McDonald's needs people. They're going to have to pay $10 an hour. So your burger's not going to cost a dollar. Now it's going to cost $2.50. But that kid who's working at McDonald's is now making $6.50. Now he's making $10. What is he going to do with that money? He's going to spend it. Wouldn't you guys see that as being a huge motor for the economy?
All right. Does anybody want to take that?
Well, on? I mean, his point, I think, is that you have a large pool of undocumented workers who really don't have the full protections of the law. I mean, that's what this country is all about, is the full protections of the law. You don't have that in Russia. And so it's depressing wages. There's no question about that. I'm old enough to remember when my dad would put a hog in the back of the pickup truck, take it into Oscar Mayer's. They'd slaughter it there. They'd give him a nice check. We'd have some money for to buy groceries and plus a little bit of pork, too, to take back home. The hog kill left Madison. I think now you have to go into, like, Nebraska and Kansas. There are a lot of illegals, at least in the past, have been rounded up and arrested at those plants because it was a rush to the bottom for wages. And you're right, they were getting $6 an hour and no protections. Instead of those good Oscar Mayer wages where we had lots of neighbors who had farmettes, 40, 80-acre farms, they worked at Oscar's during the day. They could afford that farm.
So I think the way that we deal with this, and for me the next sort of obvious step is we remove that illegality. We entitle them to full protection of the laws. We establish that floor. We take away the ability for employers to blackmail workers at the plants by pitting whites against Latinos and blacks against Latinos coming in.
This is not about race, Ben.
No, I think it is. And, no, you know, I'll tell you what, actually. I was out in Ellis Island last week. My first time out in New York City.
Were you admitted legally then? You went to Ellis Island? Or?
Actually, some of my ancestors were, okay. And I got a chance to look them up. And it was really interesting to me because most of the folks who were at Ellis Island were not folks who were obviously sort of long-term, third, fourth-generation American citizens. They were mostly first-generation American citizens, mostly Latino, right? A lot of visitors from around the world who were there looking at all the Jewish and Italian and Irish folks who had come through 100 years ago. And to me, yeah, it's partially about safeguarding the rights of workers and in our wage scale so that we're able to feed our families and put a roof over our head. But it's also about fairness in terms of looking at the history of this country and saying, why are the policies different now?
Well, you know, Ben, you just said that you were over in Europe and whatnot. I think they probably inspected your passport very closely, and they probably had to go through a lot of routine at the airport. You know, the problem with our border in Mexico, first of all, you're not a country if you don't control your borders. And the problem we're having, too, beyond this, is that there's a thing called not just Mexicans coming up, that's fine, something called others. I mean, this is some of our enemies, and we do have enemies, Ben. I can't imagine why, but we do. We're such a good country. They come up through that way. I mean, you have to control your borders. And you can't say, come one, come all. Our infrastructure may not be able to handle everyone that comes. It's not doing anyone a service to say...
You're saying the folks from 9/11 came in through the Mexican border.
No, I'm not. But now there are some worries and some suspicions that is happening, that we're having some sleeper agents coming through there. They're establishing themselves in that way. I mean, it's an obvious ploy. Why go to LaGuardia or JFK, I should say, and go through all that routine when you can go to Mexico and come up that way?
To me, that's not a way to set policy based on suspicions that aren't documented.
We didn't include this story in your packet, gentlemen, but it just reminds me that the Green Bay City Council passed an ordinance this week that would punish businesses who hire illegal immigrants, like by yanking their liquor licenses. Is that something a city should do, Dave Blaska?
No, I really believe in a limited role of government, just as the Madison City Council has no business talking about impeachment. That's the right reserved for Congress. I don't think that the Green Bay City Council, or was it the county board in Brown County, has any say over immigration policy.
Mm-hmm. Ben Mansky?
Well, actually, now that you brought up impeachment, I'll just listeners know that impeachment is going to be coming up for a vote, not only at the Madison City Council, but also at the Dane County Board. And I'm sure that if the city council could impeach the president, they would. But what this actually is a voice of the people sending a message to Tammy Baldwin to take a step here to move impeachment in Congress.
No, it's a voice of some people. It's
well,
the
voice
of
the
people. You know, they had that vote in Stoughton.
They had that vote in Stoughton,
and it was voted down.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. We had the troop withdrawal votes last year, and conservatives screamed bloody murder because the people were allowed to vote. If the city council had the ability to put it on the ballot before next spring, I'm sure they would have. I know they would have. And I think we both know what would happen if it went to a vote in Dane County.
Yeah, both the City Council in Madison and the Dane County Board had resolutions introduced this week. Is that right, Ben? What is it asking? It's asking Tammy Baldwin to take the lead on this?
Tammy Baldwin, and also for Senator Cole and Senator Feingold to get behind the movement for impeachment. I just want to specifically cite the alders and supervisors, your buddy Barbara Vetter and Ashok Kumar on the county board, and Alder Marsha Rummel.
It's just filled with
greens. And just for all those Democrats out there who are frustrated with the Democratic Party leadership, Here's another example of Green Party elected officials representing you and taking up the issues that you care about.
Well, let me ask you, though, to comment on the Green Bay City Council or the Brown County Board, whichever it was, that passed the ordinance to punish businesses who hire illegal immigrants.
I think it's very wrong-headed. I think it's going to have a negative effect on Green Bay in terms of their economy. I think it's going to lead to more division within the city. I think that eventually they're going to either simply choose not to enforce that ordinance or they will repeal it. That's my prediction.
But, Ben, let me make a very important point here. Not that any of my other points haven't been important. They're all equally important in my view. But you talk about the voice of the people. It's an amazing thing. This issue came out of almost nowhere. The politicians weren't talking about it, but the people were. Mm-hmm. And this is an issue that also cuts very deeply. I think it's encouraging in a way, is that I think the great majority of Americans, including in Brown County, they believe that you ought to follow the law, obey the law. This is a wonderful country because we are a country of laws. And to come in here illegally and to live an illegal life, to be abused by employers, by people who pack these folks in the back of a semi-truck and mm-hmm. forget about them and they die in the broiling heat in the desert, that is not the American way.
Right.
And the American people, I think, have spoken here. This is truly grassroots.
And that's why we're seeing such a massive push for immigration reform, because people say the law is wrong and we got to change it.
That's right. The only question is how. And it must. And they're also saying that the borders must be enforced.
Well, Leo Duran tells me that he looked it up, and both Senators Feingold and Cole voted in favor of the energy bill that passed in the Senate late last night or early this morning. So they voted for it. We will continue. We're going to move on to some state issues coming up after we take a short pause. Dave Blaska, our guest, former Dane County Supervisor. Ben Mansky, also our guest, former co-chair of the U.S. Green Party, currently a fellow for the Liberty Tree Foundation for the Democratic Revolution. And you can join in with topics from the news that you'd like to bring up. Again, moving to state issues now. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to The Week in Review on this Friday, June the 22nd. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Kathleen Dunn is with you. Kathleen will talk with two leaders of the Iraq labor movement about the situation facing working people and unions there, the effects of U.S. occupation, and the prospects for withdrawing foreign military forces. That's coming up after 9 o'clock. We're going to talk about some issues in the news, making news in the state of Wisconsin for the rest of our week in review. And let me have Brian Bull, one of our reporters for Wisconsin Public Radio, set the stage for this next issue. Brian attended the school board meeting in Madison when the school board took up the issue of whether or not a new elementary school in Madison should be named after Vang Pao, Hmong military leader.
At the meeting, a small group of Hmong held up signs that said, "We are Hmong, and we believe in freedom and democracy." On the other side of the room sat another group, waving posters that said, "Honor your process," and "Go back to the list," referring to the original roster of nearly 40 names from which Vang Pao was chosen. Before voting, board member Lucy Mathiak spoke highly of Wisconsin's Hmong population.
"Many of whom are veterans of American wars who lost everything because of their support for United States foreign policy. It is especially painful to be at this moment because of that."
Until recently, the Madison School Board stuck by its decision to name a school for Vang Pao, but after he and 10 other people were charged with plotting a coup against the Laotian government, the board reversed course.
"All those in favor, please state aye."
"Aye."
"Aye." "Opposed?" And that passes 7-0.
Shua Vang, a former board member and Vang Pao backer, says he's disappointed at the outcome.
"There are other schools in the district named after people who have tainted past too. This is not about procedures or policies, but about community standards."
Madison resident Mary Reed says she's glad the Vang Pao name is gone, but she's frustrated that the Madison School Board might start the naming process from scratch instead of reviewing other finalists.
"They're prolonging the pain and the controversy. I would hope that they would go back to names that they themselves narrowed down and get back to important board business."
A school board meeting set for July 9th will review how to advance the naming process. Brian Bull, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Okay, so did the Madison School Board do the right thing, Ben Mansky, in deciding not to name the school after Vang Pao and maybe starting all over?
I don't know about starting all over, but I certainly think they did the right thing and they corrected a mistake that they had made. It's unfortunate that it took sort of the very embarrassing sort of news about the indictment to bring them to their senses. I was kind of shocked that they took this step, but I think that they were responding to citizens in the community who were very well organized, outspoken, participating in the process. And I do want to honor the participation of folks who are on both sides of this issue. I think it's interesting because it was a very impassioned debate, but for the most part, the debate was civil. You know, I do want to suggest that if they do reopen the process, I think there's a gentleman who was just speaking who I disagree with on this issue, but they should look at naming the school after Shua Vang. He is a Madison native. He went through the Madison schools. I think he's contributed an enormous amount to the community, and certainly he's not going to put himself forward, but I'm going to put him forward. And I also want to say that he was the first Green elected to the school board here in Madison.
He was the first Hmong elected
in Wisconsin.
Maybe even one of the first in the whole United States.
That's right. So he's made, I think he's made enormous contributions to not only his own community, but to the broader community.
Yeah, good for him. You know, it's too bad they didn't name that school after Vang Pao. They should have named the school after him. They should have built a statue to him, and they should have held a parade for him. You know, if Ronald Reagan was still alive, this guy would get funding, Vang Pao, for his... You're talking about Laos is a communist country, and the Index of Economic Freedom it puts Laos ranking 26 out of 30 Asian countries for freedom. You know, Vang Pao has fought his whole life for freedom. He's a freedom fighter. They want to live a free life. That is the impulse of all people, black, white, yellow. Laos has a per capita income of under $2,000. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just came back from Prague, and they've got a museum of communism. And as the brochure proudly notes, it is above the McDonald's restaurant and next to the casino. I can't tell you of how the relief, just since 1989, it's been what about almost 18 years, of getting over and through communism, and yet Madison builds a statue to Clarence Kalin, an admitted communist. And every time you read about
A Madison native, he went and fought fascism before.
He fought fascism. Yeah, and you know what they say? They never say he fought for freedom. They always say he fought because he didn't fight for freedom. He fought for communism.
I'll tell you. Nowhere.
They never say that he fought for freedom.
You know,
I don't know.
I don't know when communism became illegal.
My father fought for freedom in World War II. Yeah. He fought for freedom, and he didn't fight for communism. Why we equate communism as just another political system, you know, it's finally they're building a statue in Washington. It's a small one for the victims of communism. I mean, communism has victims, but we don't say that here, at least in Madison. I hope it's different in Green Bay.
Well, all right, let's talk about this.
I'm a little worked up, Joy. I'm on a rant.
How about socialism? How about Wisconsin socialism?
I don't want to go to you here.
That
didn't happen in the news this week,
right.
So we have to talk about issues in the news this week. And here's another one, a proposed state constitutional amendment that would at least restrict the governor's veto power. The so-called Frankenstein veto received a Capitol hearing on Monday. The proposal will take away the governor's ability to rewrite the state budget bill by crossing out words and creating new sentences. But some critics say that this proposal does not go far enough. Others are mad that there might have been a little foot dragging on this issue, so it would not affect Governor Doyle's term. What do you think of this Frankenstein veto and this move to try to ban it? Dave Blaska first on this one.
Well, I'm a recent graduate of the legislative branch of government. I'm proud of my 12 years that I served, but I also served Governor Thompson very proudly, too. So I recognize the delicate balance there. And Tommy used to, I mean, we cranked this stuff out daily that I think he had over 1,900 vetoes. None were ever overridden. And he would boast that they saved the Wisconsin taxpayer something like $18 billion, you know, cumulatively over spending that he. Now the current governor, he takes different party. He takes a different line that he has saved Wisconsin's priorities. That's why we have political parties. That's why we have elections. I do believe that the executive should have a veto, and we've just seen I wish that President Bush had the line item partial veto. He's only had three vetoes. We talked about one of them, the stem cell. I still remember Ronald Reagan, in front of Tip O'Neill in one of his State of the Union addresses, dumping this huge thudding mass of paper on the desk and saying, "That's the budget. I'd like to veto parts of it. There's too much pork in there. There's too much spending." There's a survey that just came out with Wisconsin Policy Center that said that the number one concern for Wisconsinites is taxes. I think 23% responded. Mm-hmm. So the veto can be a powerful thing. And as to whether or not this is the right package, I often say that the perfect is the enemy of the good. It takes us in the right direction. If they had to go and make it even better and say, well, wait 10 years and give the current governor the same 14 years of vetoing that Tommy had, I'd say fine. I'm not sure the political equation will take that. Tommy had the Vanna White veto. He could actually take letters. That was taken out in his term. So it's going in the right direction, I think. I think most observers of government would say that.
Ben?
I think I'm a little confused because on the one hand, you seem to be advocating for the stronger veto power for the governor.
I see.
So what direction does this take us in?
It reduces it, but he still has the partial veto. You'll never have a perfect veto. He can still take out individual words or sentences, but he can't create new sentences. I think that's an important thing to have a partial veto. What the President Bush unfortunately has is a total veto. He would have to veto the entire spending bill. That would put the country possibly in chaos. I think the partial veto is a strong tool. It must be sharpened.
Okay, that helps me to understand where you're coming from. I think I got two ways that I sort of look at this. One of which is that, a decade ago it was the debate over Vanna White veto, and now it's packaged as the Frankenstein veto. And I do think it points to the way in which, again, having an entrenched system in which the political parties are part of the state in terms of regulating themselves leads to, sort of a kind of hypocrisy. Right. So when the Democrats are in power and they have the governor's office, it's one thing. When the Republicans are in,
I served on the county board with some of your progressive Dane people. You want to talk hypocrisy? I can give you chapter and verse.
Sure. So I think one thing I will point out is that what we have in partisan elections, and this is why I think nonpartisan elections can be very important. What we have in partisan elections is that you have the two major political parties writing the rules. And that's essentially what I'm talking about. But let me just finish here. The other way I look at this is in terms of the question of executive power. And I really question whether the president should have any role in the legislative process. And I think that was a common view for many years.
The Constitution says he does.
Well, I understand that. But I think that there was a real fear of the growth of the power of the executive in the early days. And we want to talk about originalism and original intent. I think many of the founders, even some of the more conservative ones, really feared an imperial presidency. And I fear an imperial governor here in Wisconsin, regardless of political affiliation. And I think it's time to really take a hatchet to the growth of executive power in this country. It's not a co-equal branch. It should not be treated as such, and it was never intended to be.
Yeah, you mentioned the Badger poll, Dave Blaska. The results out today do say that we're concerned about taxes and health care as the issues that we're most concerned about. The poll also gave pretty fairly high marks to Governor Doyle and the state legislature. We think both are doing a pretty good job. Are you in that camp? Do you think the governor and the legislature are doing a good job?
My lips are sealed.
What about you, Ben Mansky?
No. No. And I think that it's a question of what your expectations are. And I guess I have high expectations for elected officials. And I think, unfortunately, most Americans and most Wisconsinites, after years and years of corruption scandals and of seeing the way in which our public services, higher education in particular, have been gutted in Wisconsin and nationally, people have lowered their expectations, and now it has come down to Celine Dion songs and competitions
Ben,
like
you're,
that.
You're speaking for the Green Party, not for the people of Wisconsin.
Well, I'm
government
an,
corruption here ranks 2%. That's the concern. 2%, and you must be one of those 1%. So you're in there.
I'd like to hear from some listeners what they think about issues of corruption in government.
The listeners aren't calling in on state issues,
pro
though.
Pro con, you mean?
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about...
Yeah, I'm against corruption.
Really, I would think that you would be in a position to support it.
All right. And the Badger poll results that came out the other day were on the presidential race. And it says that Wisconsin Republicans have a better impression of New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani than they do of hometown political giant Tommy Thompson. On the Democratic side, Al Gore. We have a better impression of Al Gore. He was the one that got the highest marks, followed by, I think, Hillary Clinton and then John Edwards. What do we think of those Wisconsin results for the presidential race, Ben Mansky?
Well, I think that they're unfortunately not that meaningful because these are favorability ratings and not an indication of how people expect that they will vote. And also because at least one of those individuals, Al Gore, is not in the race. And frankly, I don't expect he's going to get into the race. I think he has too much to lose. He spent so much time rebuilding his image and recasting himself that getting into the race, I think, would jeopardize that. And you don't see him building the kind of infrastructure that would be necessary for running within the Democratic Party primaries. So, I guess I would just have to say, well, it's nice to know, but it doesn't really have much bearing on what to expect.
I see Al Gore as being one of the hosts or one of the on-air people at the Weather Channel.
Yeah, I have to say, I actually saw some old footage of him. I saw some old footage of him last night on a conservative website
from 1992.
He's
the blue pointer,
he's almost a parody of himself.
There's a front moving in here.
Well, it's not the Weather Channel, but anybody watching Wisconsin Eye to keep track of what the state legislature and such are up to?
I probably will do that and keep that on my my office computer, hoping that my supervisors aren't listening. But I think that should be on how you access that. You can maybe tell us. But I think that's a wonderful thing. It's unbelievable it took so long to get. I knew some of the players involved in that, one of whom worked for Governor Thompson as his press spokesman. And it's a wonderful thing. It's letting some fresh air into the process. And that's all I've ever asked is let the people know what's going on. They'll make their decision. As they indicated today, the Badger poll said Dave Blaska is right. Ben Mansky's wrong.
Yeah, it's on the computer now, and it's going to go to cable TV very soon. Ben Mansky, are you excited about this?
Well, I would be, except for my television blew up a couple of weeks ago, and I haven't had a chance to replace it. I don't know when I'll get around to that. So I'm with Dave. I'll probably be watching online. One thing that does concern me is the sort of move towards establishing statewide monopolies for cable under the guise of opening up competition. It really removes local control. So I think things like Wisconsin Eye and local community cable are threatened by that push, led in part until recently by one of Dave Blaska's good friends, Joe Winicky from the Democratic Party. I think it really does threaten local control and local democracy and open media. And maybe the internet will open up the process for us.
But I wanted to get, and we only have less than a minute. The Vatican this week issued 10 commandments for motorists to try to cut down on road rage. You're supposed to be nice when you drive and not do anything sexy in your back seat, but it's okay to pray while you're driving. Dave Blaska, you're going to be following these Ten Commandments?
Absolutely. As a lapsed Catholic, I'm going to post this on my rearview mirror here. It's interesting. I wish it's great to have a pope because they can, he gets publicity here, and I feel sorry for the Protestants. They should have their own Protestant pope.
We're out of time. We're out of time.
Missed my opportunity there.
Dave Blaska, Ben Mansky, thanks very much for being with us. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.